And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
The Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror!
Hello, Fate Freaks. Today is a very special episode of the Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror. Today, this episode has the perfect confluence of bad luck. For the numerologically inclined, this episode is episode 30, with a number 3 in it. It's also the third movie in the Friday the 13th movie, and it's also in 3D. And on top of all of that, we will be releasing this episode on Friday the 13th, which is delightful because it's an episode about Friday the 13th. Oh, somebody's going to die.
Hello and welcome to the Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror. And now we are three deep in the Friday the 13th movies. I am Chris Honeywell, and coming to you in 4D, it's the whole crew. We've got Chris Tyler, the hair metal hero.
I'm in your face.
Sean Engel.
Look at this eyeball. Look at it.
And, of course, Luke Giaconetti.
The credits are coming right at me.
Boing. And but before we get these 3D festivities started, I hear we actually got an email.
Which is amazing since we don't have an email.
We got feedback of some sort.
Yes, actually, we are getting an email address set up. But until then, if you want to send feedback to the show, go on Facebook. It's this newfangled thing that I've just been on for a week, and that's a shoot. And look for my account, which is Earth Destruction Directive, which is another show you should be listening to, and you can send a PM to me with feedback for the vault until we get the email up and running.
Mm-hmm. Or you can just go to the Two True Freaks page and just shoot your mouth off to, and somebody will find you and point you in the right direction.
Yes.
Where do I go to talk to you people?
You don't.
Who's the boss here?
I said $17 for... You know, Chris sings the fuck out of the classics on two cassettes, and I never got them. But our message today comes from Mr. Jesse Garrett, and Jesse automatically wins points with me because his avatar is Rodan.
Yes.
Oh. Jesse writes, "Greetings, Chris Keeper and Associates. I've loved all the coverage the show has offered so far. Carpenter is my favorite director, and while I wasn't very familiar with Bava's work, I've liked what I've seen so far thanks to the show. I'm really enjoying the Friday the 13th coverage, as it is the series of films I'm most familiar with, and hearing new opinions give me reason to watch the films again. I'm particularly interested to hear the group's thoughts on parts 4 and 6, as they are my favorites."
Oh, you will.
As if that's everybody's favorites, isn't it?
Well, here's the thing. This is, after this point, it's all new to me. I haven't seen anything beyond this movie. So I'll have fresh eyes for all the rest of them until we get to Jason versus Freddy. If we get,
we'll need to discuss it. Then.
Yeah, we'll have to talk.
We'll table that for now.
It's been a while, but yeah, it's going to be. There's going to be a lot of remembering, but I remember 4 being really, really good one too. So yeah, looking forward to it.
Jesse continues. "So far, the Vault has showcased a wide variety of subgenres of horror film. I was wondering, what are the panel's personal favorites and least favorites? While I think that almost any genre has gems, I tend to not enjoy found footage or, quote, torture porn films and lean towards gothic and slashers. Thanks, Jesse. Jesse, first off, thank you very much for writing in. Really appreciate getting some feedback. I'm going to throw it out to the group. What's your favorite and least favorite subgenre of horror?
Torture porn is my least favorite. And my favorite, I like ghost stories and slasher movies. And gore movies.
Go ahead, Sean.
Okay, I was going to say, yeah, I'm a big fan of slasher movies. I love the Friday the 13th series. I love the Halloween series. I love the Nightmare on Elm Street series. For found footage, that's kind of a new genre. The whole thing with, like, Paranormal Activity and all that just didn't do anything for me. I'm not really... It's odd because I like the slasher type films and the sort of jump scares that you get from them. But the jump scares and stuff like Paranormal Activity, I just really wasn't into. You give me a good psychological ghost story, I'm down with that. Movies like Ghost Story and I'm trying to think of something else. You know, gone that
Changeling.
Stuff like that. Yes, the Changeling. Good, really good movies. So hoping we'll get to eventually covering that. And then again, you can't go wrong with pretty much anything John Carpenter comes up with. His horror stuff, including, you know, like The Thing and the stuff you guys covered, you know, before I came on, are just excellent stuff to watch.
I'd have to say my favorite is zombie movies. And my least favorite, and I don't know whether to say torture porn or ghost stories, but I've liked movies in both of those genres. And I know, Luke, we've had the conversation before whether, like, torture porn's even a fair thing to call a movie. But it's hard to say. But, like, a lot of times ghost stories don't interest me as much. But the good ones are awesome. Like The Changeling or Ghost Story. Ghost Story especially more so with the book. But I always find ghosts less viscerally life-threatening than, quote-unquote, torture porn movie. A good torture porn movie can still do what it's supposed to do to me, you know, and put your teeth on edge. And it's just sort of sleazy thrills, you know?
Well, so, and also, you know,
thrills.
Another good ghost story movie, you know, I think, you know, would be Poltergeist. I mean, I think that's probably one of the best ghost story movies out there. And that also incorporates a lot of, you know, other genres, you know, jump scares, you know, the possibility of the undead, you know, so.
The summer blockbuster style Spielberg movie,
Poltergeist, probably the best PG-13 horror film ever made, I'd say.
Yeah.
Oh, Woman in Black, dude. The remake with Harry Potter. That petrified me.
I haven't seen that yet. I forgot that you were really recommending that.
It's great.
You know, I've heard that too, and I got to check that out. I mean, I'd love to put those two head to head because Poltergeist has had that title for a long time. I'm glad something's at least coming along to challenge it.
Yeah, it's Atmosphere in Spades.
I like Atmosphere.
Atmosphere in space? That doesn't work.
Well, that's how The Changeling worked, too. The Changeling was really atmospheric and creepy and sadness permeating every frame of it.
Now, for me, I mean, my personal favorites, like Jesse, I love gothic horror. I grew up watching, you know, the Universal horrors and then the Hammer horrors, watching on TBS and WPIX and stuff growing up as a kid. You give me a Terrence Fisher Hammer horror film, a beer, and a bowl of popcorn, I am a happy camper. You know, I don't care if it's a Frankenstein one, if it's a Dracula one, one of the Mummy films. I mean, I love them all just because I like those very stately, staid, gothic type of movies. By the same point, I grew up watching slasher films and franchise horror films, so I love those. And, you know, the discussion that you were referring to, Chris, was back, I think, during the horror soundtrack episode. I don't like the term torture porn because it was coined by some people pushing an agenda. It was coined by fans and producers of incredibly bad remakes of J-horror and K-horror imports. And it was picked up by magazines like Variety and other industry lingo that really hate the horror genre to begin with. So it's designed as a pejorative. You know, we've had gore exploitation movies in this country going back as far as Blood Feast, which was in the late 60s. You know, nobody calls I Spit on Your Grave or Last House on the Left torture porn because it wasn't trendy to do so at the time. But they'll call Saw and Hostel and Turistas and Containment and these other movies torture porn because they want to put them down. At the same time, building up their, you know, movies like Paranormal Activity, I refer to exclusively as fake boring night vision crap. Because that makes sense. Then they made a second one, fake and even more boring. And then they made a third one, and but you see the trend here. So, I mean, I as a general rule, things I don't particularly, I really like, I said, slasher films. I like gothic horror films. I love creature features. If you've got a monster, I'm going to watch your movie. You know, that's pretty much a given. I mean, look at what I do. Found footage, stuff like that. Yeah, you know, that those are, to me, they're boring. They don't come to any conclusion because the whole point is we're not showing you anything. Even Charles Band, master of incredibly cheap horror films, had the decency to show you stuff throughout the film. Now, it might not have looked good. It might have been incredibly cheesy and fake, but at least it was something. It wasn't just people doing something and nothing happened.
Yeah. Now, I'll go out on a limb. Yeah. This may be a controversial opinion of mine, but I am for found footage. I really enjoyed the first sort of found footage movie with Blair Witch Project. Okay. I actually enjoyed that, and I thought that was an enjoyable, engaging, and downright creepy film.
I'll say that movie unearthed. Scared the hell out of me when I saw it the first time.
But after that, it kind of got, it's gotten overused and it's gotten watered down, and it's gotten away from that original concept that was done in Blair Witch. So I don't know about the way you guys feel about it, but I thought Blair Witch was a good example of found footage horror that actually kind of worked.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it didn't do it for me. The only found footage movie that I'd put on a shelf is Chronicle, and that's not even a horror movie. But that's a found footage movie that actually makes sense.
I mean, we can go back even further. Later on down the road, we're going to talk about Cannibal Holocaust.
Yes, exactly. Yes,
of the found footage film. And you want to talk about something that, you know, if you get Joe Bloggs off the street, who's a fan of Paranormal Activity, and tell him, oh, we got the first movie that did this found footage gimmick, and you show him Cannibal Holocaust, he won't know what to make heads or tails out of that. Because it takes the concept and spins it in a direction that others didn't want to go. And again, we'll talk about this with Cannibal Holocaust, but the idea of the camera working both ways, that we're watching stuff happening, but the people being filmed recognize that they're being filmed. And that's something I think that we got that a bit in Blair Witch, because they were obviously, the characters they're playing are all playing around with the camera the whole time. But in the like Paranormal Activity, it's an incredibly boring slice of life that maybe something sort of happened. And three... Mm-hmm. Almost happen in this movie, and again, that's I don't want to overstate that, but you know, that's the beautiful thing about horror, is that horror is defined by generic intent. We've talked about this before as well. You can do just about any kind of story as a horror story if you're trying to scare the audience. So there's multiple methods that you can go to scare the audience, and different things are going to appeal to different people, and it grows the genre. I prefer to think of the genre as additive. You know, horror nerds, we're I think, worse than heavy metal nerds in that we love to classify things until you've got four adjectives before
right.
The word. Oh, it's a trad Italian giallo psychic movie. It's like, what the fuck? What the hell,
That's
man?
That's the only true kind.
it's like of horror flicks, you know, like a John Travolta thing. So it's, you know, Jesse, I love Jesse's question because I like talking about genre, you know, again, in case you're told. But it's such a wide breadth of stuff out there. And Chris, you made a good point. You might not like a genre. I don't like ghost stories hardly at all. I really, except for stuff like Legend of Hell House and old school stuff like that, I don't like ghost stories. But you get a really good ghost movie. A real good example is The Devil's Backbone by Guillermo.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't seen that
I've heard
yet.
About that, yeah.
I've heard about it, but I can't wait to see it.
I don't like ghost movies, but I love The Devil's Backbone, you know? I don't, you know, but by the same token, I really like the Saw series, but couldn't get worked up and be bothered for stuff like Hostel or Containment. Never really appealed to me. You know, Saw, the strength of Saw to me was on the overall narrative over the seven films. Hostel exists more simply to be a geek show.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's good to ask these kind of questions and look at it critically, because horror gets dismissed so much as a genre. It gets dismissed so much as, well, these stupid horror fans, they'll go see anything and make the movie number one for the first weekend it's out, and then it'll drop off. And the industry, as a general rule, hates horror, and a lot of mainstream viewers hate horror. So you need to think critically. And so I appreciate that, and I invite the listeners to send in more feedback. Tell us what genres of horror you like and don't like, and why. And let's talk about that. And
we'll, yes,
on the Facebook. I betray my age when I say the Facebook. Put it up on the Facebook, and we'll talk about that. Because there's you know, I think this, again, discussion should grow the hobby, whatever your hobby is, and not divide it. I think, and I hope that we can. I don't know if you guys have been bringing that, but that's the mindset I bring to doing this show, is let's talk about something that maybe you haven't seen and you haven't thought about seeing, and say, hey, that's cool, I'm going to check that out. And because I check that out, I'm going to check this and this out. Hey, have you guys seen that?
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's one of the things I'm glad we're doing with the Italian horror, because I think I can speak for most of us, aside from you, Luke, that we probably wouldn't have been all into that unless you had kind of not really dragged us into it, but, you know, brought it forth to us and let us take a look at it. And now that we're seeing it, we're really engaged in it, and we're really finding a lot of an enjoyment in it. So this is something that, you know, we wouldn't have actually just jumped into had it not been brought up in conversation. So the fact that people, you know, please send in, you know, what you like, you know, what kind of things interest you, and we'll look into those, and, you know, maybe eventually down the line we'll put these on the show.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yes.
I've got a little spreadsheet of films that have been suggested. If there's something you want us to talk about, send it in. We'll see what we can do, you know?
Because chances are we've probably already mentioned it to ourselves.
Yeah, that's for damn sure. So, are we ready to poke into this our main topic?
Oh, yeah.
Probe it.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah.
Get your red and blue glasses on, folks.
It's coming at you.
I almost found the anaglyph version of this to watch, but I had it once before, and it was such a headache-inducing thing, you know, on the computer, that I decided to do the just regular DVD version of it.
Now, I actually remember the era when the 3D movies were coming out in the mid to late 80s, where we had Jaws 3D and we had this.
Mm-hmm.
This was like kind of the renaissance of the 3D in the 80s, because they did this and then those two sci-fi movies, the Metal Storm and Space Hunter.
Adventures in the Forbidden Zone.
This was the first 3D movie since, well, like 65 or 66, I think.
Probably. And you're so unused to it today, because nowadays 3D is pretty much commonplace. You actually have to pay to not go see a movie in 3D, a major league release. But the thing I love about this movie is it so gloriously enjoys the fact that it's in 3D and tries to make as many shots that they can.
I wouldn't use the enjoys word as much as the exploits word.
Okay, that's a better definition.
They take every... But I gotta tell you, it made a big impression, because my friends who did go to see it, I mean, described every single 3D. There's a scene where they're juggling, and there's a scene where an eyeball, and they were just loving it, you know? I mean, while I was watching this, was wishing that I was watching it in a theater full of rowdy people when it first came out. That must have been a riot, and I really regret that I was too stuck up to go see it at the time, you know. I had like about half of my friends would go see it that were like, come on, we're all going to see the new Friday the 13th. I'm like, you're full of shit. And now it's just like, what was I missing? You know, this must have been crazy in a theater full of stoned teenagers, drunk.
Oh, yeah, you know, Chris.
Bloodthirsty.
Chris, you know what, what's funny is my note for that. When you were at Disney with Scott, did you go see Muppet Vision 3D?
Yes.
Dude, yeah, I cried my eyes out.
What is Kermit's line from that? We're not going to resort to cheap 3D tricks. Cheap 3D tricks, underlined. Yeah. Oh, yeah, this is, I mean, and you know what's funny is we talked about this with 2, is that take a look at 2 following after 1, and it's almost like the filmmakers said, okay, well, here's what worked from 1. Let's keep that. Let's try some different stuff. We see the exact same thing happen here because the stuff that worked from 1 is kept. The stuff that worked from 2 is kept. The stuff that didn't work is jettisoned and new is tried. And yep. They're really hitting that formula right here. This is that sweet spot where we start to get into the films where they get right, you know, they maximize that formula. Mm-hmm. And that rank on the film right here.
You could definitely see in like the opening few minutes, you know, after they did the sort of recap of the first movie, which really didn't make any sense because, you know, the ending in the first movie didn't really, or the ending in the second movie really didn't end, continue on in this movie. The whole Jason coming back from the dead wasn't even played with. But the stereotypes were all set up in that sequence of all of them in the van. There's the hippie stoners, there's the promiscuous kids, there's the girl who might be pregnant, who had premarital sex, there's the plucky virgin who's probably going to get away, there's the jock. They're all the stereotypes are set up here, and they're all people that you want to see offed by Jason in this film. So it's
I don't know on that one.
Oh, really?
I didn't want Shelley to bite it.
Well, it's funny you put it that way.
Thing with Shelley is that I've maintained a list over the years, which I call "Don't be that guy" in a horror movie, and Shelley's right at the top. Don't be the practical Joker guy, because you're as good as dead if you're mm-hmm. the Joker guy.
Oh, if you're the practical, as soon as he did that trick where he put the axe in his head and fooled everybody, he was sealing his fate because you knew it was you knew you could almost hear it in your head. Shelley, stop kidding around, you know. Shelley, you know, you can just
he made himself unlikable at the very beginning. I know he was supposed to represent sort of
awkward,
you know, us. He was supposed to sort of represent.
Fuck you, man.
No, I'm saying this myself because I swear to God, about that time I had the horrible curly afro, was kind of overweight, was into special effects, and yeah, I could relate to Shelley, sadly. So
yeah, but I think the problem was the actor.
I'd buy that. Yeah, the acting.
A lot of the acting. That blonde guy. iPop guy, man, what a horrible, he had a just that great dumb delivery. It was mwah.
See, I thought the worst actor in this was Rick, the guy who was the main character who didn't really die to the end. I thought he was just so he could not deliver a line to save his
life.
That's
the blonde guy, right, who got his head crushed,
so.
Right?
He was
horrifyingly bad. Yeah, he was stiff as a board. It was.
Well, he was running around with that chick. I'd be stiff as a board too. This movie's got the best looking women so far.
Yeah,
with the least amount of nudity.
It was like I was watching the nudity and this thinking to myself, wow, they shot this nudity with cropping it for TV in mind. They're like, well, we could throw a little nudity into the film and make everybody happy, but at the same time, this will be very easy to take out, you know, without much hassle.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think, Kiro, you made this point, is that this was also a little bit of a changing character for Jason from the last film, because in the flashback, he's way...
rapey!
Yeah, I was going to say, way too interested in Chris, as rapey Jason is what you called him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I mean, and then she was the one who was saying she might be pregnant, right?
No.
No, that was...
That was the blonde girl, and she's pregnant.
Oh, okay. See, I totally got them mixed up and was thinking that maybe there was a little Jason seed planted. That was what they did.
No, the whole that's the kind of forward-thinking idea that's not allowed in this series, Chris. Not to put too fine a point on it. Oh, man, but... But it's interesting because Jason unmasked in that scene, and it's the face he's going to have at the end of this, which is one of the reasons they have to change the ending of 2 in the flashback. We can't see Jason jumping through the window looking like, derpy Jack Black, the Toxic Avenger light when he goes in the flashbacks here. And I understand this came up before Toxic Avenger. Don't send me email. So, it's taking what works and jettisoning what doesn't. And we've really stepped up. It's like, okay, people like the fancy killings. Well, we'll get some fancy killing in this.
Mm-hmm.
And all my notes are just pitchforked, macheted, knifed, spear gun. James with that spear gun. It's like Thunderball out here with the spear gun, for crying out loud.
Now, one of the weird 3D effects was when that snake struck.
The fakest snake ever, yeah.
But you could see the wire.
The wire that was like...
You could see it on the eyeball, too.
Yeah, on the eyeball, too. And there was a little weirdness with the spear, too.
Yeah, the spear was clearly running down the cable,
Yes, yeah.
Because all those things had to hit the middle of the lens, otherwise they'd have to reshoot it. Like him throwing the wallet at the camera took like 20 takes.
Yeah.
I love the way they portray teenage ruffians in the 80s. They always have what is wrong? Well, what is wrong with a lot of 80s movies is just the way they would portray these caricatures were almost like somebody playing dress up.
Yeah.
Like the stoners, when you first see the stoners, they're not just, first they do the Cheech and Chong smoking out the van part, but then when they're driving around and they're smoking their joint, each of them has their own joint, but not only that, they're holding their bag of pot,
yeah,
their other hand, like holding it up, like, look at this, I'm a stoner, I got my bag of pot, I got my joint. And we just smoke them, We just light them up when I'm going to take a shit and blah, blah, blah.
I love that this film has the courage, the sheer courage to show us not one, but two dumpy guys on a toilet.
This is another thing about movies. When they have people on toilets and they're done, nobody ever wipes their ass in these movies.
That was...
They don't even cut away. These guys just, are done. They get up and they just hike up their pants and off they go. Twice
that was the thing
movie.
That was brand. More horrific.
All you need is brand. Brand flakes, man. You don't have to wipe.
Well, I think that... I mean, that's generally... You don't see people wipe in any movie, so you can't blame...
No, I'm not blaming it.
13th, yeah.
Yeah, but I would rather, at least get a hint of them pulling down some toilet paper and doing something than realizing that they're walking around with, asphalt running down their
Well, yeah, knees. It's exactly what your mother told you when you were a kid. Wipe your ass and wear clean underwear in case you get axe murdered and the coroner doesn't have to look at your shitty skid-marked drawers.
See, that's the problem, though. Because just like Bill Cosby said, first you say it, then you do it, so you're never going to have to clean up in the end. and I got to love this film also for, the kind of contemporary stuff, throwing in the issue of Fangoria.
Yes.
On Tom Savini. Mm-hmm. I've always loved that. And not just because after the Tom Savini article is 25 years with Godzilla.
Yeah.
I knew you were going to mention that.
Jason Voorhees and Godzilla in the same movie. You got to love it. But again, people who were going to see this movie, if you were a guy anyway, you read Fangoria. Probably had that issue. So you're like, oh, that's awesome. Oh, now she's dead.
Now there's blood all over the issue of Fangoria. The people at Fangoria must have been just so happy to see that happen.
See, one of the things that I also liked about the movie, and this is another thing that caught my eye, when they're in the the convenience store picking stuff up. I didn't care about the interaction between, you know, Shelley and the quote unquote biker punks, whatever. I was too amused by the issues of Master of Kung Fu and Ghost on the center back there. I was like, what issue is that? I had that.
But of course, Shelley's reading a porno, though.
No, see, what would be funny if he had the porno, but he has the issue of Ghost tucked inside of it.
What's more lurid?
I mean, this movie was obviously made with much more of a wink and comedy and nods to, you know, when the first couple, when they get killed, when the guy's messing around, I mean, what were they at, a sort of truck stop or something? But there was a train theme going because there was a sign that said, beware of speeding train. And he had
I'm guessing they were like a convenience store, I guess, but it was like a
train theme.
Or something, you know?
Yeah, because the fish is named Lionel. And so it's just, so there's just little things thrown in for nerds and for horror fans.
I almost wonder if they had that set available to shoot at.
Yeah.
But I agree. I mean, this is definitely one. And this continues pretty much, I mean, I'm trying to think, this really kind of continues onward for the rest of the series, that this is not aimed at a general audience. I remember being on the second one that, you know, the first one, especially the first one, were movies for stupid teenagers to go on a date on, and you hope that the girl gets scared just enough and titillated just enough that you might get some in the parking lot.
But they tried to pretend that they were taking it sort of seriously, you know, that it was there was comedy in it.
But it was a serious horror film.
Right, but this is a horror film, yes. This one is just like, oh, you want people to die? They're going to die.
And it worked. I mean, this film... I mean, a budget of about $2.5 million made close to $37 million in 1982 money.
Oh, it's a riot. It must have been. It's made for the theater. It's made for a group of people hooting and hollering and waiting for what's next. And between the killings, you get, you know, people juggling balls at your head and...
And yo-yos and...
Yeah.
Everything. Eyeballs.
False. You know what's funny about the eyeball scene to me is that I often say that things will go from the ridiculous to the sublime. I think this is kind of the reverse of that, because Chris comes out looking prick, and we see the audience can see that Jason has his hand clamped over Rick's mouth around the corner of the house, and she doesn't see it. I think that's just really a very clever, well put together shot, and it's like, oh, that's very well. And then it goes straight for that to Jason crushing his head and his eyeball popping out. Mm-hmm. That's the Friday the 13th I remember right there.
Yeah. Speaking of the Friday the 13th, you remember at least Jason without the mask on. Oh, first appearance of the hockey mask too. He actually looks like an adult 40-year-old version of the little hydrocephalic boy that jumped out of the lake at the end of the first one, which I kind of like, because it seemed like it's a little more consistent. I don't know what happened after, you know, with continuity's out the window. Who cares? I mean, Chrissy apparently was ditching her parents one night, and Jason maybe raped her, and that was 2 years ago from when this movie starts. I mean, who the hell knows what's going on? Do we care? I don't know. Maybe I'm thinking too much about it.
No, that's the problem. They weren't thinking. You shouldn't be either.
Yeah, I agree.
That was one of the things that kind of confused me, because they did set it up with the thing that they did in the second movie of giving you a sort of synopsis of what happened at the end of the second movie, at the beginning of the third one. But then it goes completely off, and I don't think any of these characters had anything to do with the second movie aside from Chrissy actually having an encounter with Jason where, like you said, she would have sexually assaulted by him.
But that would have taken place before... I mean, that would have had to have taken place around the time of part one, then.
Mm-hmm.
It would have... It had to take place at some point before two, because two was, what, 5 years after one, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Ugh, I'm confused.
And this picks up immediately after two. My head hurts. So...
Yeah. I think it's best not to think about it.
Oh, shit. You know what I forgot to do? I forgot to take a death count.
I got it. I took it.
How many were there? Because I was watching.
Okay,
it,
well,
it has to be the most.
This is gonna be contentious.
Okay.
Depending on what your beliefs are, there are 12 bodies that are destroyed that we see on. Well, we see 11 of them. Shelley's death is off screen, but that still counts. Now, if that blonde girl was pregnant, I'm putting the death count at 13.
Oh.
I can accept that.
But we'll never know. Unless we find the coroner's report.
Yes, find the coroner's report for the fictitious movie from 30 years ago. I'm
all
sure.
Right. Well, then it's a definite 12.
Okay.
So possibly we'll put, 13.
We'll put 12 and then put an asterisk by it and, you know, say 13 possible infant mortality or.
Yeah. And the old guy lives this time. The crazy.
He's the old guy in this.
Yay! He's got an eyeball!
He wanted me to have it.
And he never comes back. He should have come back. Nope. He was great.
Well, you know, that's the thing. You know, if a kid does it, it's cute. Grandpa does it, you know, not so cute. I think it's great that we're, you know, after two films and an hour into this one, we finally have the iconic look, as the hero mentioned, with the hockey mask. Not only that, but also the machete. And then in the finale, when he's chasing Chris in the barn, the way that Jason Voorhees moves in that barn, we finally hit. This is, you know, the iconic Jason Voorhees. The way he's moving around, the way that the head snaps when he looks, that's the Jason Voorhees that is cemented in people's minds. So it all starts here. So to me, I don't think, I mean, I like this one a lot. I've liked all, I mean, I didn't particularly like the first one. I've liked 2 and 3. Go figure on that. This one, I think, gets dismissed a lot of times because of the 3D gimmick aspect, but this is really solid F-13 stuff in here.
Yeah, this is all the tropes finally distilling into a cohesive unit.
Yeah, but it still hasn't got to the point where Jason is the supernatural character yet.
No.
He's still
he's just Chrissy getting bigger. It's almost like he's and here I am, maybe I'm thinking about it too much, but maybe he's when we get into Freddy versus Jason, where they're sort of fed by people's belief in them or whatever, you know, like Tinkerbell.
Yeah.
Tinkerbells. But, you know, he's visibly grown since the last movie. He's now more of a, he's more like the Shape from, you know, the Halloween movies.
Yeah.
And there's a great Halloween reference. When Chris is running for him, where does she go and hide? In the closet.
Yep.
Hide, you know, it's like R. Kelly's going to pop up at some point in these closets, I think. And if the Shape or Jason Voorhees would stab R. Kelly, I'd pay it to see that. But yeah, it's again.
Me too.
And Chris, you made a good point that he's still, or Sean, you actually made this point as well. He's not supernatural yet. He still can be hurt. I love when Chris hits him with the log, and my comment logged. And I don't mean logged as in she took down his name and information in a journal. You know, logged means something else, and that's exactly what it means, right?
Well, yeah. When she gets the knife out of the blonde girl there, and she starts swiping at him, he recoils. You know, he's.
Well, he's noises of pain.
Yeah.
I say he got stabbed in the, I thought he got stabbed in the hand and something.
Hand and thigh.
In the thigh, and he went like.
So, you know, he's still a very strong character, can take some abuse, but he's not one of these people that, you know, you can obliterate his body. Or
oh, she took the piss out of him pretty good when she stabbed him in the thighs. She slowed him down considerably, you know.
We see him get frustrated with his temper when he can't find her in the barn. He starts just kicking and swiping at everything around him because he's just he's pissed off. So he's still the mortal type of character. And that's actually, we'll see that in 6. The exact reason for that was the idea that it didn't make sense that he could rapidly dispatch all of these people, but then the heroine could still beat him up in the final reel. Just in all that. To me, it's now just quaint seeing this, because you think about Jason as, you know, the Kane Hodder unstoppable killing machine, like just setting a buzzsaw loose through a crowded room. And here it's like, oh, he's getting hit with a log, you know.
Shovel to the head.
But I like that. I like the fact that he's not, you know, completely unstoppable. That gives it more tension to me. That makes you feel that there might be a possibility that you can get away from him.
Right.
You know, in the later movies, when he's just completely unstoppable, it does, you know, it does allow you to get some of these great kills and everything, but it also sort of diminishes it because you can't, you're not going to get away from him. He's always going to be there. He's always going to come back. So
there's got to be some creative method of getting rid of him for the end of the film.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And we definitely see that with the last few entries.
Oh, yeah.
You know, talking about a creative ending to the film, you know, this has got kind of a double fake out going on here.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because she wakes up in the canoe. And again, if I've seen the first one, I'm not going to go to sleep in a canoe.
Right, just, right.
Just mm-hmm. out there. But obviously she missed it. So we wake up, we see Jason in the window. How much is that Jason in the window? Beep, beep. And he comes. And then he's gone. And she wakes up and it was all a dream. Okay? And then it's like Inception, because now it's another dream. Mrs. Voorhees has her head back and jumps up out of the lake. And that was just a dream. And then
yeah.
in the police car. And my first thought, of course, was how does Mrs. Voorhees have her head?
She sewed it back on?
Sewed it back on. Apparently she's very handy. And it's like, you know, it was so funny because my wife was on the phone while I was watching this, and she's just making comments to her friend, like, oh, that's bad, you know, as stuff's happening. And she just, finally, when Mrs. Voorhees jumped up, she's like, why are you watching this? What is going on? I'm like, I don't think they knew. And it's like, oh, you know, Jason jumped out of the lake in one. What, Mrs. Voorhees jumped out of the lake in this one?
She's probably saying to her friend, I don't mind that he's watching these movies, but he's taking notes on them. It's creepy.
He recently bought a whetstone. I don't know why.
Actually, all kidding aside, I did just buy a large series of mill files, so.
Oh, jeez.
But no. What's funny is actually the original ending that was scripted for this, and I don't believe it was ever filmed.
I think they did film it.
Did they film it? My DVD doesn't.
Pretty sure they did.
But you know what I'm going to say here. Had Chris coming back, opening the barn door, and getting cut in half by Jason. Couple.
They didn't film it. I thought they did. But yeah, that was the original ending.
You talk about it. That would have been just a great. Because this was originally supposed to be the last one. That'd be
weren't they all?
Sancho! Did it, you know?
Yeah, this was going to be the last one. Then the next one was going to be the last one.
Oh, you know, 5 was never intended to be the last one. I mean, 5 ends on a setup for a sequel.
Yeah.
I don't know why they would ever want it to be the last one. It was, you know...
Because Paramount hated these movies.
They... hated them, but they kept making money. And they
What is it with Paramount and that shit? You know, they have something that's good, but they don't like it, so they... Well, they did. I don't think they crushed this, but it's like Star Trek.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They kept... both franchises go through kind of similar throws. They keep cutting the budget. They keep having to make do with less, and the films are still successful. And they're made, one film contract each time. That's just the way they did business with genre work, I guess. I don't know. Now, that'd be a hell of a crossover.
Ooh.
Star Trek versus Freddy?
Star Trek and Friday the
13th. Jason? Yeah.
Oh,
it's...
Oh, yeah, I want to see Spock try to put the nerve pinch on the Techno Jason from Pat 10.
I just want to see, Kirk do the double axe handle.
Yes.
In my arsenal.
That begs the question, though. Do we want to see Jason take out the Enterprise crew?
A few members of it, yes. I'd love to see him hack up Chekhov. I'm sick and tired of Uhura, you know. And finally, you know, Hero, I know you're excited. That means we get to see Nichelle Nichols naked before she dies, so. Star Trek 5.
Good God. Oh, that's like the one part of the movie I fast forward through.
Everyone
else. Boys.
Oh, God. That means the rest of the Enterprise crew had to see her naked ass while she was doing that.
Yeah.
And yeah, whatever.
Scotty was loving it.
Yeah.
Ah, yes.
All right, but this isn't the Star Trek podcast. This is just talk about Jason.
You know, Chris, you should make one of those. yeah, I mean,
yeah.
But you know, we talked about this again in the last film that we were starting, and Hiro, you said this. This is where the series begins to become the horror party film go-to. You know, you got a group of gorehounds over with a case of your favorite beverage. You throw this on, you're going to have an absolute ball for 95 minutes, just from start to finish, hooting and hollering and you know, the which all of y'all do.
This has one of Hammetal Hero's top Friday the 13th deaths in it. Can one of you guess what it is?
It's got to be the handstand chop.
Abso-friggin-lutely. The handstand chop.
I packed that up and watched that two or three times and was
drops that asshole like a sack of potatoes. Oh, it is great. And then you get to see the aftermath afterwards. Oh,
I mean, love the way that's filmed. It's so immediate and so impactful.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It looks like a big. It looks like a real human made out of meat getting hit hard.
Oh yeah.
Another one I like actually is Chili getting rammed with the fire poker, because it's kind of a, again, we haven't really seen, you know, we saw her boyfriend get electrocuted. I love any time they always throw in an electrocution because it's fun in these type of movies. But him killing her with the poker, I thought was really just a well done shot. And I actually liked Chili. I know stoner girls like that. So,
well, what's funny is the two stoners both died from like hot.
Yeah.
They're both smoking.
Eat, play. Yeah. And I love that. Oh, what's his name? Chili's boyfriend is. What's his name?
I can't remember. Was it Chuck?
Chuck is like the biggest craven little coward. I love that. Well, I don't want to go down there. You know?
Yeah.
Go with that. Go with that. You'll live longer. No, you didn't. Never mind. Yeah, but that, the death of the handstand guy, it's like, you know, it's like douchebag away. There you go.
Yep. Yeah, what the only thing that guy did in the movie was what? He did his yo-yo onto his girlfriend's face and juggled and did a handstand.
And had sex in a hammock.
Well, the hammock did all the work, apparently.
Exactly. Gotta admit, you know, his girlfriend's pretty cool. I mean, you know, she's obviously, you know, puts out a lot. She reads Fangoria, you know.
Yeah, she went on to become a famous news anchor. Tracy Savage. Yeah.
So, oh man, this was just a ball, absolute ball. I started watching this. I'm thinking, okay, maybe I'll get about 45 minutes in and I'll cut it off before I go to bed. I watched the whole thing and I was like, just had a big stupid grin on my face the entire time.
Yeah, you gotta love the Frankenstein moment at the end too, with the arms out.
Yeah.
When after he gets the hatchet to the face.
Oh, that's right.
I love that. It's like, because even her face is like, you gotta be fucking kidding me. It's like, he's gotta be dead now.
Yeah, or this is he? this was a great, mash. It brought all the tropes together. It's finally starting to gel. It's finally starting to get the Friday the 13th that we know. And I'm really, really liking it now. This is where I want to see this go.
Well, it's funny because now I'm going into all virgin territory for me, so I'm really looking forward to it.
Oh, virgin territory should survive.
That'll be good.
I thought this whole area was like considered the shittiest of the Friday the 13th, but I'm learning otherwise. And since I'm enjoying these ones so much, I have a feeing. Now, how as a sort of parallel franchise, how did were the Halloween movies?
They got just as ridiculous.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Was it as much fun though? I mean, did I miss a lot by missing out on all the Halloweens after two or after three?
Me personally, I'm gonna say no.
And I'll agree with Hiro because the Halloween sequels. Well, let me say this. I enjoy 4, 5, and 6 for what they are, but they're not. They don't have the same type of party atmosphere.
Okay.
I got away from trying to be serious until, like, H2O was a little jokey. But the original Halloween franchise was always, you know, Halloween was really damn good. We could better be serious. I think that the producers of Friday the 13th realized their audience was geek show and just embraced it wholeheartedly with a machete in each hand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're not outside of Donald Pleasance. continuing to chew the scenery, you're missing absolutely nothing. Because it gets soap opery with, like, oh, is this a relative of Michael Myers, and who is this guy? Like, I don't give a shit.
If you're a fan, I mean, if you're a fan of Halloween, they're worth watching, but it's not gonna be something you're gonna throw on with a bunch of guys in a case of beer. It's just not. And that's always the strength of the Friday the 13th films, is because we talked about this back when we did Twitch of the Death Nerve, when ultimately story doesn't matter, characters don't matter, set pieces are all that matters. You could turn your brain off and just be entertained for 90 minutes.
Yeah, you can not even pay attention until you hear the music kick in.
Halloween never quite got to that point, at least not with the original sequels. So, yeah, I mean, between this and Nightmare on Elm Street, those are the two that are always linked in my mind, because they always sequels around the same time, whereas Halloween took a long break after season
one
came back with Return of Michael Myers. So those are the two that'll be interesting to compare. If we ever get around to doing the Nightmare films, that would be a lot of fun to compare and contrast.
Mm-hmm.
I would be into that. I don't even know why I didn't think of those. Yeah, I always think of them as... And they even both... Did Halloween... Halloween didn't get a spin-off TV show. I know...
Friday the 13th
Nightmare on Elm Street did.
Friday the 13th, the series, was not quite the same. Pretty cool show, but not really Voorhees.
Yeah, it really had... Same I don't only, think it yeah. really had anything to do with Friday the 13th, except for, like, one episode where they... I thought the finale, they were actually looking for Jason's mask. Maybe.
Yeah. But you're right. They those two franchises, I think, were always more close to the films. You know, they started out trying to be serious, but very quickly devolved into kind of fan fest type of movies. And then they kind of peak, and then they keep going. Then, you know, eventually you go past, you go from trendy to being camp to being kitsched. And when you get itched is when you know you've hit the big time. You know?
Yeah.
They must have been fun as hell to make, you know. They must have been...
I always thought it would be a real pain to be the continuity guy on one of these movies. Just looking at the shot from yesterday and then trying to touch up the blood on somebody's face. Like, okay, had a little bit there. And a little bit there, you know.
Well, it was... For one thing, and I'm sure they didn't, if the continuity guy brought this up, the director probably just glossed over it, but, like, you know, they kept showing Jason sort of cleaning up after himself. You know, he'd kill somebody, you'd see him carting him off, because he seems to like to do that. He seems to like to cart him off and hook him up into some sort of Rube Goldberg situation, so when somebody
goes... He's a considerate murderer.
Yeah, but he seems to know, like, have a good idea where people are going to run so they can run into each... thing, but where the hell was I going with that
idea? Probably that they never leave any blood trails anymore.
Exactly. Yeah. That whole house should have been just splattered with blood. It just had gallons of blood all over it, and people keep walking into it and going, where is everybody? Guys, this isn't funny, you know.
Shelly.
Yeah. You slice a guy doing a handstand in half, you know.
Oh, yeah, I know. She's walking there out of the shower, like, a few minutes later, and she's not, like, slipping on the blood, you know?
That happens later down the line.
And then he gets him up there, and he keeps him from bleeding until she hangs out for a little while, and, you know, just so it times out, he's just masterful setting up those little dioramas.
Now you know what he was doing at camp.
But back to those bikers. The costumes all 80s bikers, they have, like, permed hair, like they went and spent $50 at the hair salon. And I don't think real bikers or punks did this, but if you're a biker or punk in an 80s movie, why did you always have, like, a bandana tied around your arm or leg?
Yep.
Why did you have raccoon tails?
Yes.
Why did you have raccoon tails, you know, tied to, like, your leg, your jacket, or whatever? That was...
This is cool, man.
Yeah, that's what bikers do, dude.
Uh-huh.
It's like stoners carry around their bags and smoke joints all the time to hold them up.
That the gang was the typical 80s multiracial integrated gang.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
This was like an adjunct to the gang in Death Wish 3.
they want him to be ethnic, but they want him to be look, the black guy's the mastermind and stuff, and the white guy's the Weasley.
You can actually say the black guy died last.
That guy died last. Yes,
true.
Oh, that guy just got his face pounded. I mean, pounded. He was just crushing his face. He looked pretty damn good when he sprung back.
Yeah, but that guy just waits. I'm going to wait till that guy comes back.
He must have just had like one of those rubber faces that just went back into shape, because he just had a little like noogie on the top of his head, and that's it. I mean, Jason was sitting there just hunkered over him, just repeatedly crushing on his head.
Good times, great memories.
When you remember that time I beat the shit out of your face?
Well, yeah. That's the thing, though. Usually somebody's real dead, real good when you see them getting hit in the head, and all that they do in response is their arms and their legs sort of leap up a little less each time that you hit them in the head. That's usually, you know.
You know what we call that? We call that method. Obviously, now you know something, Chris. I want to Zazzle a shirt that says Voorhees kills teens dead.
I just want to picture his unmasked face on a T-shirt and have it say "Rapey Jason."
we'll put that up in the store.
This
with one shirt.
This is my rape face.
Oh God!
Send all hate mail to Earth Destruction Directive.
Yep.
Do we think he raped her? I mean, come on. How did she got away?
What she got away. Like,
I don't know. It doesn't make any sense. Why
she
would
passes out and then says she woke up at home in bed?
I seriously thought they were trying to set up some sort of thing to where she would either be carrying a demon seed or some sort of McCoy type remember
thing.
We'll
get to that later. Wait till like 9, and then
I know there's some point where there's a little kid involved, and I'd hear tell tales, and my friends would see him, and there's lightning hitting graves and stuff like that.
Six.
We're about to. Four and six are. Oh man.
Six are fan.
Get ready.
What happened to five?
Not so much. Yeah, not so much.
Yeah. Five has a staggeringly high body count, but it's not good.
It also has a really cool, like, I think it's a Canadian pop band song in it, too, which...
Oh, and that chick is dancing?
Yes. I have Friday the 13th soundtrack. Where? I gotta find that website.
Do we get more nudity? We probably get less nudity as time goes on, don't we?
Not until much later, I think.
But even Freddy vs. Jason, we get some nice nudity.
Well, we're sort of getting in that time period where nudity and horror movies take a break from each other, which was really unfortunate. It doesn't seem till really like Piranha 3D or the first Piranha movie.
Yeah.
That was in 3D, wasn't it? Yeah. That Piranha movie, that boobs really came back. As
boobs
an element in an exploitation horror movie, over-the-top horror movie, you know, boobs galore. There was a time when it seemed like as the 80s got closer to the 90s and into the 90s, they focused more on the blood than it.
I'm cool with that.
I like the boobs.
Part of the reason, who doesn't? I mean, come exactly. on, I have my own.
If you're going to a movie that's going to exploit, let it exploit everything it can exploit.
That's a good point.
You know, I mean, if you're going to make an if you're going to make a movie that's gory enough to be R-rated, why not throw some boobies?
Show me your titties.
Exactly. Know your audience.
Teenagers. Yes.
So, like I said, just if you haven't seen this one, give it a spin because it's a lot of fun. And if you're listening to this show, you will appreciate and enjoy this film without a doubt.
Well, I was going to say, if they've gotten this far on the Friday the 13th, they must be.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're not going to listen to this unless you're remotely interested in
right, exactly.
Subject matter.
Yeah, and I don't know if they'll still have it by the time this comes out, but if it is, check it out. It is streaming on Netflix. You know, they say it's supposed to be streaming till like 9, 1 of 13, so it might be gone by the time this comes out, but go check it out one way or the other. It is just, it's a fun one.
You can find these DVDs for a song now.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Yep, you can find the box set for a song, too.
I was going to say, this is the kind of movie you're going to find, like, at Rite Aid by the cash register sometimes, you know?
Yeah.
So scoop it up for $3.99.
Yep.
It's worth every penny.
Yeah, and more.
And if you want a good throbbing headache, go on the internets and see if you can't find the Anaglyph 3D version and put on your red and blue glasses and prepare to be underwhelmed and Google-eyed.
Prepare to be underwhelmed!
Excellent, I think that's a...
You can sponsor an episode of this or any other of your favorite Two True Freaks affiliated shows. Simply click the PayPal link on our website, donate any amount at all, tell us which show you're choosing and what message, if any, you'd like us to read on your behalf, and you will be an official sponsor of that show's very next episode, with your message read in the show's opener. It's that easy, and there is no minimum donation. Be a show sponsor today.
If you shop at Amazon.com, please consider using the link at TwoTrueFreaks.com to shop there. If you use this link to go to Amazon and then you shop, Two True Freaks gets a little cut of what you buy and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So you get to shop as usual and help out the Two True Freaks at the same time.
Welcome to Amazon. I love you.
Visit our brand new website at TwoTrueFreaks.com.
Two True Freaks is always spelled TwoTrueFreaks. Join our forum at forumforgeeks.com, where you can discuss all of the shows on our feed with us and your fellow listeners.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
And hey, you can friend me, Scott Gardner, on Facebook, too. My name is spelled Scott Gardner.
You can friend me on Facebook, too, if you can find me.
Now available, Two True Freaks t-shirts. See our website for details.
Two True Freaks is a very proud member of the Comics Podcast Network. You can check that out at www.comicspodcast.com, where you can hear our new episodes when we put them up.
We are also members of the League of Comic Book Podcasts. For more information, visit comicbooknoise.com/league.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks? Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks. We'll be right back.
were finally invited aboard one of these spacecraft, which landed near Ann Arbor, Michigan on October the 24th of 1954. This is a drawing of the craft. As I was leaving the craft, the commander, Soltek, said, "Soon others of your people will be able to have an experience similar to this."